We're going to open the meeting back up again to deliberate and discuss what we learned today and also give the staff some initial guidance on how to draft a guidance document. And I guess, does anybody want to kick off the discussion here?
I've got a couple of just quick thoughts. And my assumption is that we're going to sort of give our initial reactions and then go away and think about this. But so these would be just initial reactions. I think I have a much clearer idea of what the task force intended and what the legislation intended for us to do. Specifically, with regard to the three criteria that are presented in the statute, as far as the geographic extension is concerned, I'm inclined to accept, I think, the statement of the Senate Majority Leader as well as others that the idea here was that these are to be very small, incremental adjustments to boundaries if they are to take place at all. These are not to be wholesale redrafting of these boundaries. So, therefore, I would say that these have to be looked at in a very specific and site-specific way. I would suggest, and it's also suggested, is that while these boundaries were drawn with some logic behind them, they weren't drawn with specificity. So that where a project or the logical project crosses the boundaries, it seems to me that we ought to be receptive to an application for modification of that boundary. But it should be one that straddles the line, makes sense in terms of project-specific nature. And also, Ryan Clark made a statement that really caught my attention. And that was, we have to be really careful that, you know, it says a logical extension of the boundary. Well, when we extend the boundary, does that then constitute an opportunity for another extension? So I'm going to suggest that not serve that an extension of the boundary that we may create, however small it may be, would not serve as the new boundary to be logically extended. I don't know how to say that, but I'm real concerned about that. So I think it's really important that we look at that and that we make that determination in a site-specific way, at least assuming that we're going to be doing very small projects. If we end up doing 15 or 20 of these things, I think then we're going to have to look at more landscape scale. But I think the larger discussion of landscape scale should come about the evaluation of the statute itself. Okay, that would be my thing on that. The other thing, meets the state goals. I mean, I'm not sure about this. I mean, there again, I think we're right. I want to stay out of this business about our becoming the PUC or some international energy commission. It's not for us to determine whether wind power is the greatest thing in the world or the worst thing in the world.
What about the idea of a cost-benefit analysis?
I like
and
that.
And then have the PUC at least and
look
maybe.
At it. I think, though, and here's where I'm having a little bit of difficulty, and this is where I need to think about this. The point has been made, and I think it's a good one, that there are contradictory state goals. Mm-hmm. Now, do I want to open up a hearing to the contradictory nature of state goals? I don't know about that. But nonetheless, I think that's an important concept. I'm wondering if I think we have to be cognizant of the fact that there are conflicting goals. I'll leave it at that. And I like the idea of a sort of a gross benefit-cost analysis that looks at the benefits to be achieved by reaching those goals, as it applies to a specific project, okay? What are the benefits to be achieved, and what are the costs? I like that idea. Again, sounds nice, a little fuzzy, but I like that. as far as the CLUP is concerned, I mean, I think that it really is the threshold criteria, in my view. You guys might disagree, but this is what we do. And so I think to determine whether it is consistent with the CLUP is really where we hang our hat in terms of any expansion. But so those are my initial thoughts, what they were.
I agree with that. I think that the real epiphany was this notion that the expedited area map was drawn on township lines. And on looking closer, if you find that part of the topography spills over the line, which it's going to in a lot of cases, then that, it sounded to me as though that's what all we needed to do to say, Yep, if it was an otherwise permittable project, but there's a piece of it out there on the other side of the line, then we can expand. Otherwise, I agree with you that there's no wholesale expansion. As far as the state goals, I think people can argue the state goals that they want, and that place to argue the state goals is at the legislature. And I would encourage anybody who feels that way to do that. But I don't think it's going to play well for us to say we're throwing out the state goals because we don't think that's a good idea or whatever reason.
And I should have said, I think, what I said in one, that what we need to do also is take better advantage of our sister brother agencies. You know, we need to bring in, whichever agency is appropriate and make specific statements regarding the project and its consistency with state goals.
Yeah.
Just along those same lines, I wonder if it wouldn't be helpful to have whoever it is over at the PUC that might be reviewing these look at the guidance document or give us some, once we get along, to give us some input about what they think are the kinds of things that they would like to see. Yeah. And any other sister, I don't know who.
Well, I think we should do the same with IFNW. I mean, there were good points made about wildlife habitat goals maybe being in conflict with these other goals. So
I agree.
Let them duke it out.
Well, if we're going to do that balancing, benefit-cost analysis, then we're certainly going to want some information on the potential impacts relative to the benefits.
Right. Yeah. And as far as the principal values, you're right. I mean, that is what we do. We have a CLUP. Whichever CLUP we have at the time that we're looking at it is what we have to look at. But basically, what we're going to be dealing with is the essence of environmental protection. I think we're all right. And it really gives us all sorts of leverage. It nearly gives us the same opportunity to look at things that we have in the rest of the jurisdiction.
Anybody else? Go ahead.
Just one final comment. I would like to know. It does. I read the statute. At least I think I read the statute. And I would like to know, is it in fact the case that we can expand, we have the discretion to expand the expedited area, we do not have the discretion to limit it? In other words, if we were to find an instance where we feel that the area was so significant that it should not be subjected to expedited, do we have... It appears to me on the basis of the statute that the assertions were made today were correct, that we do not have the authority to limit or reduce the size of the expedited area, but we do have the authority to expand it.
Well, however, if somebody brings us a project that's in the expedited area and we find that there are reasons why it can't go forward, we have de facto reduced it. Right. Right.
I mean, if you like, maybe the guidance document could address this question that you have about the shrinking of the expedited area.
I think
except that the criteria are different, because the criteria that you're using for the expedited area are different than the criteria you would use if it was in the unexpedited area.
That's correct.
So it's not
but mostly pertaining to zoning. I mean not to the actual project.
Right.
Pretty much in this case, it blows away the PMA.
Right. Well, we find that the project can't go forward, we're saying that that's not a good place for a wind power project. So I think it would be cleaner if it could be erased from the expedited area, but at least we'll have the institutional memory that we're not going back there because we found it wasn't a good place to be.
It would come up for the comprehensive review, 2013 or whatever? And I mean, and that might be...
You would assume
they would have the opportunity to adjust the expedited area.
Yeah, the legislature?
At that point. Right. Well, I would guess. Is that going to be a rulemaking exercise?
My assumption was, from hearing what we said this morning, that the legislature would amend the statute.
You're right.
And then we would do the rulemaking, whatever it was.
I think Samantha has an answer here.
We just, Marcia and I just met with the Office of Energy Independence and Security yesterday to go over their annual report to the legislature on how this is all going. And so they did mention that there will be a comprehensive review. There's also the opportunity each year to report to the legislature about things that need changing. So to the degree that you'd like to make recommendations in the future, I think there's a venue for that.
And you did say, Samantha, that to that point that BPL is putting in some information to expand wording that's in the legislation now about what places are within on state lands should be considered as this high scenic value.
The statute directs them to make rules to identify areas either within state ownership or where the public has a legal right of access that to further delineate areas that should be considered under that that class of locations. And they've now released a draft for rulemaking of additional locations that they're identifying beyond the locations that were already identified in statute. So it's a expansion that the legislature had contemplated based on the judgment of BPL about what were the most special places that would need to be protected.
You say they were listed, but they weren't delineated.
They have, the way that they have, in the legislation it says, it directs BPL to make these rules, and BPL has identified certain places and said, like, you know, this unit of lands that's within BPL ownership is included in this list. So
they're defining.
They're defining it by the their unit, and so the boundaries might be a little malleable over time, but it's the public lands unit essentially that they're identifying as the place.
There's room for a lot more of that definition because it says things like areas that are visible from great ponds of certain significance.
Right.
Well, yeah, exactly. One of the in the definition of scenic resources of state national significance, there was a long list. You've seen the list. One of them was great ponds that were identified as in the Wildlands Lake Assessment as having outstanding or significant scenic resource characters.
And I think
so that was
will,
one of the listings.
I think that in itself will reduce the amount of area available for expansion by quite a bit.
Well, I think what happens, Steve, is it says that this is considered during the visual assessment, and then there's criteria under which you do the assessment and the evaluation that was built into the legislation.
So that doesn't just shoot it out.
So it doesn't assure it. It just gives a process for looking at it.
Okay.
I also have one final gratuitous statement, and it's gratuitous in the sense that given everything we've got to do and all the rulemaking we've got to engage in and all the stuff on our plate, this may sound like Pollyannaish, but I'd also like us to take a look. We've got, as I mentioned before, we've got these three parallel regulatory processes. It'd be awful nice if at some time we had the luxury to sit down and say, how can we sort of work these together? In other words, have one process, but it's modified slightly based on its application, as opposed to having three distinct processes with three distinct procedural requirements. It just seems to me that we're in a retrograde here as far as...
You're talking about the criteria here?
No, I'm talking about that we've got... You can apply if you're in an expedited area.
Oh, gotcha.
And you got one set of things. And we've got one process for that. And then you got the non-expedited area.
Yeah.
And we got two processes for that. Then we got this as another process.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems, I don't know. I don't know. What I mean, we may look at that and say, well, that's the way it's got to be. But I think at some point I'd like to see us look at this and see if we can't streamline this somehow. Just a thought.
I was going to say that there is considerable overlap in the types of things we're going to be looking at.
Yeah.
So to me, that's the beginning of how you try and find where they all come together and sort of streamline it into one predictable, repeatable process that we all know.
Marcia, what do you see that's outstandingly different among those processes given criteria three that we're still looking at principal values and goals?
I don't think that criteria three changes that much.
That's no, I think it's the same for each
the same. One. That's a consistency point across the board, whether it be the rulemaking for expansion of the expedited area at the permitting level. We're going to be looking at this, whether it be in the expedited or not. If we're looking at rezoning, we're going to be looking at that. That's a key component of all three.
So really it's rezoning that's the big difference, right?
It is, and there's still some tests in the expedited area, like the tangible benefits. It's very similar, if not the same, as the public mm-hmm. benefit in the demonstration of need. So
we may find
a lot of parallels.
That the deliberation is not all that different. It's just that there's an extra layer in the non-expedited area regarding rezoning.
Yeah.
That may just happen organically, but I guess it's because I'm still sitting here not completely comfortable in my own head as to how
right. to read. Right. Well, I think you've got the great idea. At some point, we've got to get to the point where we say, okay, if this, then this.
Yeah, a tree.
Yeah, right.
I think one thing that's not clear to me is, in particular, is how you decide, and maybe this is looking at it from a developer standpoint, how you decide whether do you do your project as an expedited project, or do you, go the expansion route?
And what incentives?
And so why would you
setting up? Whether intentionally or unintentionally.
Right. You know? Right. That.
Well, yeah, we did
that.
Get the comment that the committee, the task force, felt that they were saying that it's going to be more difficult in the non-expedited area because you're going to have to go by Lurk's egregious old rules, and yet we're not seeing that much difference in the rules.
Go ahead, Samantha.
I think there are some notable differences between the processes. I think what you're identifying is that kind of common theme of consistency with a CLUP, but the process is pretty different between the two. There are pretty significant timeline differences.
Okay.
We have a statutory limitation of either 185 days or 270 days, depending on whether there's a public hearing or not, to get that application decided on in the expedited process. And that's different in the regular process. And in addition, there's a pretty strikingly different visual impact criteria. So I think the point that you all just made is excellent, which is, how are developers going to understand which path they should follow? And frankly, I think your discussion today and how you act on the guidance document will be a strong influence on developers as to which path they pursue if they're not already planning to work in the expedited area. So if they're planning to work in an area that's not currently expedited, whether they approach you as a DPD matter or come to ask for a petition for an expansion of the expedited area, I think that a lot of their thinking will be driven by how you see these criteria. So I just wanted to reinforce, I think that was an excellent point that you were making.
Just to throw another thought out, I don't know whether it might be helpful to have a timeline in the guidance document, depending on which route you're taking. Days it is between, or what the different steps are, maybe. Just give that some thought. I don't know that.
Like a description of the process and.
Or like a flow chart. Or
yeah, okay.
If I could get clarification. So this guidance document, it now sounds to me like you may want it to provide guidance for whether you're in the expedited, not expedited, for all of that, rather than just how to expand the expedited area, how to interpret the criteria. So this sounds a little bigger.
We agreed upon.
Yeah,
that's
that,
okay.
How is that going to sit with you? I mean, you're the one that has to do this, and we've got a timeline.
Well, there's lots of things could be added. I mean, whatever. This is, if you feel like this is where you want to go, I just want to make sure I'm clear on.
Let's make sure that we get the guidelines, since it would appear to me that guidelines aren't as stringent as something else we could be creating. Let's get the guidelines for the expanded area, but let's think in the future about coming up with one document that somehow lays out three opportunities.
And I think to do that as an information piece rather than a guidance piece would be a first step that we could accomplish, because it really is providing information about how the processes work and what the likelihood of specific timeframes are,
right.
Rather than giving anyone guidance on how they should proceed or how they should expect the commission to proceed. The guidance, I think, really is in expanding on your understanding and your view of what the criteria mean, and then the other piece is really informational.
It sounds good.
And I know we don't really have to say this, but we're not talking about just the developers. We're talking about the public at large. We have a real clear vision of view of how this works,
just
as we should.
We had some questions here earlier about the time frame. Yeah, right. Almost more importantly. Do we have any other? Go, Steve's got.
It's when considering an expedited area, and there's some filters that it has to go through, correct, based on the statute. Is there a way to triage that, you know, whenever we get a request for that without coming to the commission, if it fails one of the criteria in the statute, that it would, we wouldn't, they just say this doesn't work, you know? You follow what I'm saying? That it would save us having to deliberate over something that isn't going to fit or is determined not to be an expandable area of the, you know, even though it may meet the geographic extension, but it doesn't meet one of the other two goals, obviously doesn't meet it. Does that make, I don't know if I'm...
I may not be following you, Steve. Are you... I mean, I think it's the commission that needs to make that determination,
yeah,
and not staff. I mean, in other words, if an applicant...
A staff recommendation, then?
Yes.
Based on the statute.
Well, in the expedited area, it doesn't...
No, not in the expedited, for the extension of the expedited.
I see. So that maybe down the road, would it be a goal of the commission to be able to...
Cut it off at the pass if it's a bad one.
To the developer,
yes.
Whether or not to
yes.
even bother proposing
right.
something is almost
an opinion, like you guys
well,
give it.
Aren't we being too specific about it? I mean, you guys already do that. If we know clearly how we operate, and someone could, like, for example, we say, all right, what we've talked about today, suppose that the guidance document does say that it has to be site-specific contiguous, okay? It's got to be, then... Somebody comes in with a proposal and wants to try to Swiss cheese, you know, you put an area way up in the middle of no place that is not to expedite it, then it would seem to me the staff would say that you're not going to get anywhere doing that.
So
your right is to go come to the commission and argue that, but we can tell you up front that based on this guidance document, that's not probably not going to fly.
That's all in place right now.
Yeah, and we do that with other things. You guys
okay,
do that all the time.
Because it's the go-to, if it's already in place and we don't have to reiterate it.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, it's standard procedure.
But again, you know, an applicant's got the right to argue that, to come before us, and the staff is not. We don't want to put them in a position of having to, you know. But I think if we get more, we have more clarity ourselves on how we're going to do this, and this is a first step. I think I just could see you guys doing that.
There could be some more predictability that we could offer developers.
Right.
It's by their choice. If they wish to petition the commission, regardless of the staff's advice,
exactly,
then they have that right to do that. And that's not out of the ordinary.
That's right. You do that all the time.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
That wouldn't subvert what our. So I just want to make sure we don't subvert that process.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
They always have the right to come to the commission.
Especially if you're,
believe the staff.
Three quarters of a mile or a mile
staff
in between.
Doesn't give them a chance to.
You know what I mean?
Go ahead, Samantha.
And just as there are two steps along that process where that sort of action might happen. I mean, one is where the staff initially talks to the potential petitioner and says, okay, so here's the guidance document. As we read it, you have an uphill battle. But, you know, clearly it's your right to petition. But then when they get to the petitioning stage, you can say no to the petition. And so you don't have to go through an entire rulemaking to then decide not to take the project up if you know at the outset that you wouldn't want to go through an entire rulemaking process and take everyone's time with that if you knew right up front there was a no-go on one of the criteria.
That's exactly what I was getting at.
So you have the option to do that.
Good.
But then that would be the commission's determination.
Correct.
And they'd have to base that determination on some level criteria.
We have to still sit down,
yeah,
accept testimony.
But we are. There is criteria in the statute, and they're adding to it, apparently, especially for the scenic tests that would allow us to deliberate with certainty over, especially if they're delineating BPL lands and Class A lakes and all that, 1As. So I just wanted to make sure that was, you know, so that it cleans up the process for us and for the developers, and you know, it allows us to filter out the good projects.
So I think going down the road, as we get more and more definition to what these scenic spots are, that'll be easier and easier.
Yeah.
You say, okay, it's, you know, Baskahegan Lake or whatever the heck it is on the list. Don't even think about it.
Steve, how long have you been on the commission?
Too long.
How many years?
23.
Has the state been about identifying significant scenic areas, and how difficult has that proven to be?
Well, you know, we need a Fred Todd action. Fred made us do the lakes assessment. Now, I heard a call for the wetlands assessment today. There's an interesting project. You know, maybe Fred would like to take that one on. Mountains. Yeah. We could ask him.
Anybody else from the commissioners have any comments? Concerns, more input? And I guess, yes, staff, do you feel like you've got something to work with here?
Yeah, I was jotting down frantically, you saw me, jotting down all the various comments and ideas as they were coming out, and I think we've got some concepts to work with.
Well, and certainly some of the things that we heard today that,
oh, absolutely,
you think would be helpful.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm wondering is where we're going from here on the schedule. I have January 25th as a draft guidance document. Will we hear from you anytime between now and will we have look at this at all during any of our regular meetings between now? I guess we only have one, don't we? This is our next meeting, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, our next meeting is January.
January 3rd.
Isn't the 25th?
No, January 2nd.
No
January
skipping
2nd.
Out
okay,
on the clop. You must do the clop.
Very funny.
No,
I think that the 25th was a cutoff for accepting any comments from the public.
Okay.
And then for us to get it out. Well, the 25th is also the mailing date.
Okay.
But what we're going to be trying to do is craft together a draft to bring to you in the February Commission meeting so you can take a look at it and
okay, so
talk about it.
So the draft that we're going to be looking at is the same one that's out for public comment? No.
Okay.
So the draft you're going to see at the February meeting is what the staff will have produced. And we said January 25th, so everyone would have a couple of weeks to look at it prior to the meeting. At the February meeting,
so
you'll give us further guidance on how to revise it.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's the same draft that you're putting out is the same one that we're getting.
And the public can comment at that time as well. So
okay.
For the month of February, you'll have given us some initial feedback. The public will be commenting. We'll take all of that. We'll work up recommended revisions for March. In March, you'll look at it again and hopefully say, staff, you got it right, or staff, you got it wrong, and here are these specific changes. And then we can finalize it prior to the March 17th public hearing. That's part two, so that you will have what you have endorsed as a guidance document in hand going into the March 17th hearing. So February is the date at which you look at our initial shot, and the public gets a look at our initial shot. But then it's March when the rubber really meets the road on you telling us what you want for sure in that document. Does that make sense? And are you happy with that schedule?
I guess it was Bob Weingarten that said it probably would be good to lay it out in some kind of idiot-proof format so that we can at least understand
it. Is that a Steve White-proof?
Yeah, you got it.
Can you tell me what that is?
Somebody on this commission started a rumor that the January regular business meeting is the 2nd. It's the 6th of January. So please, everyone, stop that rumor. It's the 6th of January.
That would be on a Saturday.
That's Steve. You can go to the 2nd.
Must be something else happening.
Anything else? We all done? All right. Let's adjourn the meeting.